All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in for another episode of the Barabbas and Rice Show. And we are continuing our series about freedom and liberty. And today we have the honor and privilege of being joined by Carl Lentz. And Carl is actually affording us some of his personal time. He's got some stuff going on. So we're not using video, but you're going to hear the audio. And I hope you guys find value in today's conversation. And I know we're kind of limited with time, so we're just going to get right into it. Carl, I appreciate you accepting our invitation to join us. How are you doing, man?
All right. And you said the one man's name is Barabbas?
My name is Stan. Hello, Carl.
Okay.
Yeah. Last name is Barabbas, but my first name is Stan.
Really? Oh, I never heard anybody named Barabbas. That's interesting.
You know, that,
few of us out there.
You know what the
obviously
you know what that means?
Know what I mean. Obviously.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
I think everybody, it's like being named Bob Hitler. You know? Right. Like, okay.
Yeah, he's Stan Barabbas from the YouTube channel Bodhisattva Love. And I'm Chris Rice from Rice Crypto.
Okay, and I guess that's some Rice Krispies fame, huh?
Sort of Rice Krispies. That used to be my old DJ name, oddly enough. So for people, because I've been researching you, and there's not a wealth of information that's on the internet. I know that common law or law that
ex the FBI.
Yeah, well, I get that. Yeah, so
thanks to a Freedom of Information Act, is about 6 inches thick.
I get it, dude. I totally do. The other Carl Lentz. There's another Carl Lentz with a C, and that's pretty much most of the information I'm finding. So, in your words, who is Carl Lentz?
Oh, well, like I said, in his own words, it's amazing how my mom gave me that name, Carl. If anybody bothered to Google my name and said, you said you Googled my name, but you didn't Google what's the definition of the name Carl, did you?
No, I
didn't.
Like
the origins. Yeah. It just takes 2 seconds. Just Google it and you'll see. Just type in, you know, Carl, German definition for the name Carl, and you'll see. And that's probably the best definition I could give you. My mom picked a good name.
Did your mom? Okay, so the Germanic variation.
No, but the definition of the word.
Oh, means. Wow. Free man, strong man, man.
Just means man. Man. That's all it means is man.
And I have noticed.
You know, how my mom knew just to call me Carl, just to call me man and nothing else. That brave man, strong man, tall man, wise man, you know, didn't give me any crazy names, just man. It was amazing. How it all worked out.
That is wild.
That's interesting.
Yeah, because man is in the image of God, and that's what I teach. We're in the eyes of our Creator. Now, whatever your Creator is a string or a speck of dust or an old man with a beard, whatever your Creator is, we're in that image. Obviously, the Creator, whatever it is, whoever it is, wherever it is, you know, we are it. We are part of it. So that's how I basically just explain to people, man, you know, like, if you all go back to the one, it all goes back to one. It's a pretty simple concept. I mean, I can't understand why people need to talk about this stuff for hours. If you have that concept in your mind, it all goes back to one. Okay, where does the one source come from? Where does one authority come from? Where does all authority come from?
So well said. Absolutely. Man. Mm-hmm. Me and Stan actually talk about what I guess some might call the Christ consciousness, that we are all emanations of the source, just a piece of it, and together we make up the whole.
Honestly, I have no firsthand knowledge if there was this man named Christ. I'm sure he's a great guy. You know, I wouldn't want to hang out with him because I'd probably break every rule and a commandment of every Bible that he preached. So I probably wouldn't get along with him very well. I'd say, man, come on, get off my back. You know, I'm going to have a little fun today. You know, come on, you're a little preachy, buddy.
I love it.
You know, no, I'm not giving my coat to that guy today. No, buddy, I worked way too hard for this thing. Let him get a job.
As far as being able to research you, I found the loresociety.com website, broadmind.org. I've seen something about the Uncommon Law with a K instead of a C.
Oh, yeah, that's.
I'll have links down below for all these things. But when I first talked to you on the phone, I wanted to kind of get an idea. How did you come about being so knowledgeable on the subject of what people call common law that you kind of refer to as law common to man?
Yeah, law common to my people. I don't know common law because everybody has their own agreements, contracts, and beliefs. So I'm not familiar with your common law, just like you're not familiar with my common law, but I am familiar with the law common amongst our people. Don't steal, don't lie, don't cheat, you know, that. Mm-hmm. But the common law is you know, law is just an agreement between the parties, man, that entered it into and consensually and agreed to abide by its terms and conditions. Now, whatever agreement you got into with whoever, how in the world would I know? I'm not a party to it. What party, what agreement have you and I ever gotten into with other parties? I don't know. They might exist out there. I don't have a clue. So it's a common law between you and the government. I don't have a clue. I don't have a clue. And that's enough. And that's enough for me to care about. It's not none of my business.
Right. Yeah. As far as when it comes to this stuff, are you self-taught? Did you happen to go to college
or anything? No, I got extremely lucky. See, and that's just the complete. See, this is almost everything I show you folks, and almost anything I want to teach you folks is completely, completely opposite of everything that you know. It's completely backwards. Because like the first thing you just asked me, did I go self-taught? Did I go to university? I got extremely, extremely lucky that my dad and his dad and his dad's dad before him and his dad's dad before him were illiterate. They couldn't read or write. I got extremely lucky. So all they knew was the law. They did not know the law. They knew the law. They did not know the LAW. Somebody handed them a piece of paper and say, look what it says here, the signing at Ruddy Mead, 1215 Magna Carta. They just say, that's a pretty piece of paper. Where'd you get it from? They say, no, read this. They're like, yeah. And what is it? How's that going to change my life, affect my life? Well, thank God they just like, we don't care. So like I said, I'm very grateful that my family couldn't be bothered to worry about what somebody else wrote down. So that's all. See, unfortunately, you folks are trapped in this conundrum all the time that you're always worrying about what somebody else said, what somebody else wrote, how somebody else believed, and that you have to follow that belief, or that belief was drilled into you, that it's true, and only God knows what's true. You know, those people knew what the truth was at that particular moment in time where they exist on Earth. Now, obviously, things change as the years go by. Truths change. World is round, world is flat, world is whatever. So, you know, it's a maze, it's whatever, you know, it's whatever you want to call it. You know, eventually we're going to find out, maybe. Mm-hmm. But it's our truth at this particular moment in time. And it modifies and change. Depends on the people's, you know, what they were, the information they were able to take in at that. But like my dad, like I said, his people were only taken in by what they were able to witness. You know, what the natural surroundings were, the natural law, you know, the things that God showed them, what they witnessed.
You brought that word up, natural law. It's an important thing.
Yeah, well, it's the natural law would be something that it's unwritten. You know, like I said, if you Google what the word L-O-R-E is, L-O-R-E, it's the beliefs and the customs of the people passed down from generation to generation, usually by word of mouth. Okay, that's how the Eskimos do it, Aboriginals do it, you know, people in the Bedouins do it. You know, that's how people do it. But since time began, basically. Recently, modern invention is something called ink and paper and pens. And that's a modern invention. So before that, everybody knew what the L-O-R-E was, but nobody knew what the L-A-W was because very few people spoke Latin because all the laws were written in Latin. So who knew what the law was other than the clerics or the priests or the guy who decided, you know, to write it down, who decided, you know, his interpretation of what the law is. So the LAW is, to me, is a sick joke. You know, anything in the written form is a sick joke. Now, I got extremely lucky. My mom finished at the top of her class in a Catholic school in New York City, and it was a business school for girls, and she finished at the top of her class, and she was an IRS tax auditor for about 20 years.
Your mother? So
that's interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yes. Oh, yeah. So I got very lucky. She had an extremely high security clearance, and she told me everything I needed to know about the IRS and about 4 minutes one day on the top of a flight of stairs. But that's all I never needed to know about the IRS. And I've been able to handle them with that 4 minutes conversation for the rest of my life.
So the 16th Amendment was never ratified. Is that true?
You could basically laugh and say, has any of those amendments been ratified? Because we have no witnesses that could come forth who has any firsthand knowledge that they ever were ratified. Any of them were ratified ever. We're just taking somebody's word on it that we believe that this is legitimate paperwork, that somebody drew this stuff up before our time. And we just have to lay our trust in these people. Now, do you want to trust these people? That's up to you.
So, Carl, yeah, to keep it in simple terms, we're just basically moving on through consent and fear.
not consent and fear. It's convenience. It's just easy to just teach people something, a certain doctrine, just a rote theory, just A, B, C, just teach kids A, B, C, D. Don't do critical thinking. Don't do critical thought.
Indoctrination centers, yeah, schools.
Yeah, just basically just teach people, you know, this is, you know, 1492, Columbus discovered the ocean blue, whatever, sailed the ocean blue, whatever. It's just drilled into our heads, you know. It's passed down from time to time to time, you know. It's the same thing like, let's say, the Book of Moses. The Book of Moses was written down 650 years after the fact. So the Mosaic laws were written down 650 years after it happened. Could you imagine, like I say to people, say the story of George Washington was written down 650 years after he lived. 650 years. Could you imagine how crazy that story would be by now? You know, not only did he throw a silver dollar across the Potomac River, he threw a gold coin across the Atlantic Ocean and took out King George's left eye. By 650 years in the future, you know, this guy's going to be like godlike.
Yeah.
So, you know, when did you decide to write it down? Who witnessed it? I find that out myself all the time. People call me up, or people are on other people's shows saying that, Carl Lentz said this. I said, what? Carl Lentz said, don't ever speak in court. Whose court? Your court? My court? Whose court? No, that was one specific man in one specific case, because I said, if you try to answer the judge, the one sentence I gave you, and he asked you, what does this mean? He's going to realize you have no clue. You called me up on the last day. You got 20 minutes before you go to court. Just put the paperwork in and shut up. If I was you, do not say anything. Just smile and say, you know, the paper speaks for itself. I stand behind my paper. Don't say another damn thing. But people say, oh, Carlo, he says, don't speak in court. Whose court? My court? No. See what I'm saying? So you got to be careful of what's written down or what somebody supposedly said.
Yeah, and I noticed too, you have to be very specific in what you and how you question. Like when you present a question to you, Carl, it has to be very specific, because otherwise you do exactly what you just said. What court are we talking about?
Right, because like I said to somebody else, somebody said to me, he said, Carl admitted that he never initiated a common law court, and he never prevailed in a common law court. I said, that's true. I never had an agreement with somebody that they didn't keep, that I felt the necessity to take them to court. I said, you know, what is your interpretation of common law? But the way he just interpreted, say, Carl Lentz never won a common law case. I said, I never won a case law, you know, based upon the law of my people. That's easy. I've won plenty of those. But common law? No. You know, what agreements did I get into? And who's saying that I'm not in compliance with that agreement? Who am I saying that they are not in compliance with the agreement? So see, it's a very tricky word. Everybody's using this. This is a perfect example. Word common law. You guys banty that about, you know, just thinking like you think you know what it means. I ask people, what do you think the word common law means? They say, explain it. What's the word common law? Give me the definition.
Well, what I have personally understood now, it is unwritten. It's something that's kind of common to everybody, and it changes per situation, because not every situation is the same. Not every society is the same. So there's different cultures. There's all these different things that come into play. So it's a flexible thing.
Okay, go to Google. Okay, go to Google right now, because you guys are probably sitting down. I'm walking around. I'm doing stuff, so I can't do it for you. Go to Google, type in the word L-O-R-E, definition, D-E-F-I-N, type it in, and hit enter.
Body of traditions. A body of traditions and knowledge on a subject or held by a particular group, typically passed from person to person.
Yeah, by person word of mouth.
Right, so you're saying common law would be
read the whole thing. Read the whole thing. Yeah, law, L-O-R-E, the law is passed on. Our common law, our L-O-R-E, the law that's common. The common law is case law, precedent, based upon certain statutes or rulings in civil courts.
Yeah, but with your accent being so strong, you saying law sounds kind of like lore. So, but when you
it's a sibilant. It's a trick. It's what the legal society does to you folks. Right. Latch.
Damn, man, you're really kind of blowing my way on some of these things. That's why, I mean, I knew.
Dude, I wrote a law dictionary. You're messing with the guy.
I've tried to find that.
I'm going to do is I'm starting a I bought a class from outside of the Pentagon for real cheap, and I had it shipped over here, and from Fairfax County over there.
Yeah, you were talking about this. You're going to start a classroom.
Yeah, and like I said, I'm going to start with the words, just like a simple word, like something simple, like the word law. And I'm going to explain to you folks what the word law means, and hopefully maybe I could do it in 2 minutes, maybe it takes 20 minutes to explain to you what the word L-O-R means, and then I'll explain on another, I'll start up another, you know, segment of YouTube, another clip, and it'll just be L-A-W, and then I'll explain what common L-A-W means. And I'll explain what law common to the people means. It's because until you understand what the words mean, we're totally wasting our time. You know, because I'm just like going blown over you guys. It's like Mike Tyson beating a 5-year-old. There's no fun.
I get it, man. That's why we're trying to learn from you. The point is that we need people like you who have done all this education and have learned all these things.
It's funny. You can say it's egotistical. You can say people like me. There is only Carl Lentz. There is nobody else doing this.
Well,
you tell me one person else who's doing this, who understands the definition of the words, and I'm telling you, they don't. Everybody just jumps right into it, starts reading the Magna Carta, Constitutions, Bill of Rights.
Okay, so Christopher James, who's actually says he's learned a lot from you, is more on your where you're at now. Are you currently checking out A Warrior Cause? Are you following?
It's a sick joke. It's a sick joke.
What are your thoughts on it?
He's enamored by the paperwork. He's enamored by birth certificates. He's enamored. He's like, we're going to get our courts back. I never lost my court. What court are you talking about? What are you talking about? You know, birth certificate. What's birth certificate? It's a piece of paper that somebody drafted up. Whoopie-doo. How does that impact my world? I mean, I've never walked into a courtroom and the judge picked up a piece of paper and said, this is your birth certificate. We have jurisdiction over you. If I've ever challenged jurisdiction, I've never heard anybody say, do you got a birth certificate? Then we own you. And that's all he says, like 90% of his stuff. They got a birth certificate. They own us. Who's this they? Mr. They? Mrs. They? Susie They? You mean our public servants own us? Really? That's very interesting. And how do you believe they do that? No. Okay, you want to do a fun one? Go to the 13th Amendment. What's the 13th Amendment read?
Are we talking about the old one or the one that we're recognizing? 13th Amendment.
No, the slavery one. You're thinking the 11th Amendment.
Well, no, I'm thinking the Titles and Nobilities Act, which is supposed to be the 13th Amendment. They're saying that.
Oh, no, it's 11th. Like, you can't sue the states and stuff like that. Yeah, states can't be sued. So, yeah, just go to 13th and the slavery. What does the 13th say about the slavery?
The 13th Amendment abolished slavery in the United States and provides that neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, except as a punishment for crime whereof the party shall have been duly convicted, shall exist within the United States.
Uh-huh.
Continue.
Nope, that's plenty. That's plenty. What does that mean to you? Have you ever read it?
Neither slavery nor involuntary servitude means that we're not slaves and we're not in any sort of servitude towards anybody. Is what I would take it as, that we are technically, by that, we would be free people.
Yeah, do you understand these Judge Fifi von Weiss women and these gurus? I'm not going to whip out names. Do you understand how much relevance they put on Magna Carta or the Constitution? And they have absolutely zero clue what it means. Just like if I said to you, give me a definition of what the 13th Amendment means to you. How far can you go? I don't know how long you've been doing this. How long have you been doing this?
I mean, it's something I've been researching. I started researching about 20 years ago, but there wasn't a lot of information. So it was mainly like really going hardcore this year.
Honestly. There's no information needed. Nobody taught me this. I understand the definition of the words. See, that's the problem. You don't understand the definition of words. Like, say you go back to Magna Carta. How many articles of the Magna Carta is actually still basically enforced and recognized by, you know, by England itself?
I would actually think zero, that the Magna Carta is not recognized. So there's three. Okay.
1, 9, and 29. Okay, go to a simple one. Go to number one. Number one is a sick joke. It's just like number 13. It's just like on number 13. And you guys don't realize what a sick joke it is. Just read number one and the Magna Carta is a sick joke. Read number 13 is a sick joke. You are slaves. It says it right there, but you can't see it. Because you don't understand the definition of the words.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to break that down. I mean, could you break it down for us, or is this something that you're encouraging us to do on our own?
Yeah, well, I'll just save that for a future day. How's that?
Okay, I got that. Because I definitely want to learn.
See if you can stump me. See if you can figure it out.
I mean, you're wild, man. You're very impressive.
Oh, I'm not gonna hand it to you like candy, like lollipops. and you ain't gonna earn it, man. You gotta earn it. This ain't the generation entitlement. You guys ain't gonna get that from me.
Well, thank you, Carl. Honestly, I don't want that. So
I was some man named Sandy Callahan Jr. You could Google him. He's an attorney now in Georgia. He used to be the chief criminal prosecuting in the Northern Division of Birmingham, Alabama, for the United States government. And he basically encountered my family and I when we were trying to get the United States government to help. And I was trying to explain to them all the abuse I've seen at a mobile home with six Downs kids in a single wide mobile home. What with a 14-year-old girl watching them? Can they intervene and do something to help these kids? And they said, there's no government agent, no government agency, nothing that could do anything to help these kids as a state matter, as a state issue. They said, when you learn how to.
You there? I think we lost.
Yeah, we might have lost him. We probably tune back in here a second. It's pretty wild. Carl, let us know if you pop back in.
I'm here. Okay. I didn't know I was gone.
Yeah, for a second. We just lost you for a second.
No, like I said, he said, he was just basically said, you know, once you know how to act as man, the world is yours. I said, you want to give me a hint? You want to give me a clue what that means? He said, absolutely not. He says, almost every single person on planet Earth dies never knowing how to act as man. He says, the odds of you ever figuring out is slim and none. He says, and if I showed you the way, if I pointed you how to get there, he said, I'd be cheating you out of valuable life lessons. So nope, it's every man's journey. Every man has to figure this out on his own. So at least I'm giving you guys a little couple of hints.
Yeah,
you
know, I do appreciate
the legal society. The legal society is not going to even point you in the right direction.
Yeah, I did gather you. Did you? You had a child that was taken away, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Do you mind kind of explaining what happened with that? What you were able?
Well,
that's to do?
That's what's good with YouTube is I'm going to do one page of the case file at a time.
Okay.
And show people how ridiculous it was. They just said that we voluntarily. It took us 6 years to get a copy of the case file.
Was it a son or daughter?
Daughter. Son. Sorry about that. Son.
And he had Down syndrome?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It took us 6 years to get a copy of the case file. I had to get it through the United States Supreme Court through a man named John Wilkinson Jr. And he's probably retired by now. He was the head of it since 1975. And he said, this is obscene. He said, I've never seen such a ridiculous case file in my life. I said, I can't get a copy of it through lawyers, through the government. He said, I'll send you the court clerk's copy. He said, I'll send you my personal copy that they had to submit to us when you filed an appeal. I said, wow. I said, isn't that illegal to transmit a child's case filed over the internet? He said, absolutely. I said, then why are you going to do it? He said, when I've read what I've read, and anybody who wants to challenge me, I have no problem explaining to them why I'm doing what I'm doing. I said, it's that bad. He said, it's this bad. He actually teaches law clerking in the Alabama University of Law down there, Law University down there in Alabama. He said, I've never seen nothing like this. He says, I couldn't imagine. He said, well, and all it was is they basically said that we voluntarily consented to give our child to the government, and they used some other family's contract and somebody else's family's name. If they were smart, they would at least put my name down, my wife's name down, the kid's name down, forged our signatures. Nope, they were that lazy. They put another family's case in there, somebody else's kid's contract in there to be the three-year-old is to be placed with a 80-year-old grandma, 70-year-old grandma to live with her and her uncle in an apartment. What does that have to do with the newborn Downs boy in the hospital? What does that have to do with the mom, the dad? And why is this written up and drafted up and signed even before my kid was born? Is it, you know, and he was my first kid. So what are we talking about here, people?
Do you feel like
it was a joke?
You, or what do you think was the reason for that taking place?
One, they pick on the weakest link, like this girl who's coming, well, this woman who's coming here, she's 36 or 35, 36, she's coming here. They find people who they believe can't defend themselves in court or don't have the money to do it. So they figured that my wife didn't have enough money and I didn't have enough money. And even if we did, we had no property. We didn't own a house in Alabama. So they figured it's going to be easy pickings. Plus, a Downs kid is worth a tremendous amount of money. Because when we went to his first doctor's visit in November, because he was only born 2 pounds, 9 ounces. The first doctor visit he had was in November. And the lady came in from Kentucky, and she just got an internship there in that hospital. And the social worker said to her, well, what do you think about the kid? Oh, he's a category one, or it was based on a scale of 1 to 5. I was like, well, what was, you know, I said, he can see great. He has great hearing, good flexibility, mobility. And, you know, and the social worker said, well, can you make him a category 5? Can you put him down at the worst of the list? She said, why should we do that? She said, because we get a lot of money. The more disabled he is, the more money we get. We get wheelchair ramps, vans. We get all kinds of things for the families. So the doctor said, well, let me go ask my supervisor. This is based on my first week on a job, and I don't want to do anything. And the social worker said, no, don't do that. Don't do that. You put down a 1, but we're telling you, for his next visit in 6 months from now, he will be a category 5. So I overheard this lady talking to this woman, and the mom was playing with the kid and her lap. And as soon as the little meeting ended, I should have grabbed my kid and left right there. But they would have shot me down like a dog, you know, stealing a kid, did an Amber Alert, still saying I was stealing my kid. And they did make him a category 5, you know. And he wears like Coke glasses now, and he has hearing. He had to have hearing implants and all kinds of crazy operations he had to have. So
how
anyway,
long did it take you to get him back?
Well, what was funny is I told my wife, I said, we're going down to the state capitol right now. So we went straight down to the state capitol, and we talked to Beth Schaefer, who was internal affairs. And it was like, finally, you know, we're talking in the commissioner's office. I remember the upholstery. It was nice green leather furniture. And we're actually sitting in the commissioner's headquarters there in the state capitol for DHR. And they're like, we'll get to the bottom of this. The next day we went to court. And then when we went to court, basically, I'll make it quick. The judge said you were to never see this child ever again. You never have any communication, never can talk to him, never see him, never know his well-being, neither you nor your family. So instead of helping us and saying, wow, you know, I said, this is the doctor they called. Call the doctor. Ask if this is what the social worker asked them to do. They're actually asking this lady.
You blinked out there again. Not sure if I know you're dry. I know he's driving. So you there, Carl?
Could be hit some dead spots.
Yeah, I hear you.
Okay. You hit a dead spot.
Yeah, what I'm saying is they always pick on the weakest link. They always pick on the weakest people, you know, when they do this stuff to people. They always pick on.
Turn your camera off.
Your camera's on now. Your camera's
yeah,
on.
Yeah, what I'm saying, they do it. That's what I'm saying. I moved it. Yeah, I'm charging it up. Yeah, I gotta get on the road. But they always do this. They always pick on the weakest link.
Right.
Well, do so, you Carl, wanna... real quick, were you already involved in what you're involved in now?
No.
Okay, so is this kind of like the foundation of why you're doing what you're doing now?
Okay. Well, kind of, yes, and... But like I said, my what was funny about all that is when I went to elementary school, I guess when people ask me what really got me started in all this is simple as when I went to elementary school, there was something called corporal punishment in school. And teachers were, you know, literally allowed to hit the kids, and the principals were allowed to hit the kids. You were literally allowed to, you know, strike the students.
Well, paddle them, right?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
It was specific to paddling. You couldn't like punch a kid or something like that.
Oh no. You actually walked into, it's just like the old, you know, joke. You walked into the front office, the head office, and right behind the receptionist lady, it was this big paddle on the wall that actually said Board of Education. Ha ha. Really funny. But I was such a golden child, man. You know, from first grade, second grade, because I seen other kids who would get hit. And they'd be coming home on a bus, or, you know, they'd have to try to take a ride home, you know, in New York, you could come home on a train, whatever. I'm just trying to say the roads and the rails are bumpy. And you see these poor kids who got their asses beat. And they're, you know, tough kids because they're the badass kids of the school. And they start crying like little girls because all of their, where they got struck by the principal, like the welts were breaking open and they were bleeding. I mean, these wow. Kids, oh no, that we, you know, kids were beat. I mean beat. And so they made it illegal. So what happened in 1972, everybody when I was a kid got a newspaper. Every family got a newspaper in New York. It was like that was like our way of contact with the world. And I saw on the front page, it said corporal punishment is made illegal in New York State. So I'm like, huh, you know. And I'm reading this thing, and it's, you know, it's like, what's corporal punishment mean? to students. I said, I know what a student is. I mean, I was only second, third grade, but I knew what a student was. So that caught my eye. So I flipped open the next page, and it said that it's illegal in the state of New York for any, you know, policy administrator, superintendent, supervisor, principal, teaching body, any member of the staff, the janitorial staff, to inflict corporal punishment upon the student body. And then the next line said, it's still lawful for the parents to hit their children. So it's like, that struck me right there in 1972. I said, wow, look at this. There's like a huge paragraph and all this gibberish that I don't really understand. But look at this little tiny paragraph after it. It's lawful for the parents to hit their children. I was like, okay, I see something that says legal here, and I see something that says lawful here. Why is this lingo a bunch of mumbo jumbo that I can't really understand in 5-6 syllable words? And the law, though, is single syllables that I, Tarzan, she, Jane Steele. How can I read this, the law, the LAW stuff, but I can't really understand what they're talking legalese? I can't really understand what they're saying. I kind of got an idea. And then I realized there's something going on here. And I said, wow. I said, I think I could act out. I think I could start acting like a Looney Tune. I think I could start getting away with basically whatever the hell I want to get away with in school. I don't think I could get hit anymore. And that's what controlled me, and that's what kept me behaved. And once I realized I couldn't get hit anymore, oh my God, you know, in the schools in the 70s and everything just exploded. I mean, it was funny in the 60s. Everything was basically nice and peaceful and quiet, you know, when it came to schools and school-age kids. And then you go into the 1970s, and man, then you just got all those crazy TV shows like Welcome Back, Carter, and they glorify rebels, and they glorify kids who don't go to school, like Fonzie on Happy Days. Richie was the nerd. Fonzie was the cool dude who didn't like going to school. So it just turned our society upside down once you couldn't discipline the students, once you couldn't put them in fear and make them behave, and you just let them do whatever they wanted. We just turned into a bunch of little maniacs. We just ran around crazy and started doing whatever we wanted to do. So yes, there is I do believe that there's a reason why that people should have this, every animal, every insect, every ant understands fear and pain on planet Earth. If an ant's walking down the sidewalk, it's white, he steps into the black tar of the road, he jumps back to the concrete because it's cooler. Everything understands pain and fear. So if you want to get a society to focus in a certain direction, you have to instill pain and fear. So we used to have this fear of God. We no longer have that fear of God. So we're no longer a God-fearing people. So now what do we fear? We fear going to jail, being put in a cage.
Yeah.
You know, that's a new invention as well. You know, there's no such things as police departments in New York City. There was no such thing as jails and cages. It's funny, you read stories about the James gang, you know, the outlaws, Jesse James and them, and the Younger Brothers. Mm-hmm. And these guys murdered people, shot people, robbed banks. I think one guy got 1 year in jail. I think the guy with the longest prison sentence one guy got was 3 years. And that was it. You know, I was that's like, that's crazy. That's it. You know, now you go, you get caught with possession of marijuana, you're looking at 15 to 20, or possession of a handgun, you're looking at 15 to 20.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's
crazy. Yeah, that's the only thing people fear now.
Well, I know you're sort of limited with time, and I know we're going to do more conversations. I want to quickly ask, what is the deal when people are talking? You said we're still slaves, and we've been looking into the legal fiction, straw man, and birth certificate corporation mm-hmm. system of us being corporate legal entities. Mm-hmm. How do you, what is your thoughts on that? And is there a way for us to be able to capture that and take control of it? Is there a way that we should do that within the system, or do we just stand as man?
Well, like I say to people all the time, I said, what would be the benefit of eliminating your legal person? Can you tell me what the purpose would be? What is a legal person? How about start with that? What's a legal person?
I'm not exactly
sure. You're going to be correct.
Well, I know it puts us in a limited liability situation where people don't have to take full responsibility for their actions and be accountable for the things they say and do.
Well, something simple. What would be considered a legal person by definition? What's a simple definition of legal person?
I, for me, it's just a corporate entity, a fiction.
That's all. It's a creation of the state.
Yeah.
Okay. It's under the control of the state. It's a creation of the state. Okay.
Property owned by.
Yeah, like I just said, it's simple. Like, say there's something called say you have a Boy Scout Society, right? Or a Girl Scout Society, okay? You have a certain charter, you have a certain rules and agreement how everybody's going to act within this society, the societal order. You have the legal society, the Boy Scout Society, the societal order, the Ku Klux Klan, and you got, Girl Scout, Boy Scout societies. You got societies, societal orders. And everybody agrees to abide by a certain set of rules. Now, if you want to be the head, of the Boy Scout Society, you're going to have to abide by a certain set of rules. You're going to have to perform certain duties. You're going to have to be imposed upon. If you fail in those duties and those obligations, they can impose upon you. Same thing with the legal society. It's just being members of a society. Now, what's the benefits of being a Boy Scout? Well, what's those other guys called? The 33rd levels of...
The Masons?
The Masons, right. The Masons is the side of the Lord of the Masons. What's the benefits? Well, you could be a cop and you could get all this cool information and be a member of a club and probably wear, swell hats and stuff like that and be members and have other guys to hang out with and bullshit with if you need help in a community. You could say, hey, man, he's my fellow Mason. Give me a place to sleep or, give me a place, give me some money to borrow or whatever. That's the benefit of being a member of a societal order.
Okay.
So to be a member of a legal society, then you're using like, say, legal tender or legal currency, so you have the benefit of using green dollars or debit cards. So if you wish to remove yourself as a legal person, how are you going to get to use debit cards? How are you going to use green currency? Why would you want to destroy the legal society? What would be the benefit of destroying this legal society or the legal person? Because like I say to people, I videotaped going to the bank not too long ago, and the branch manager is Jason. He knows what I do for a living. He's a good guy. And I said to him, I said, I'd like you to do a background check on me, like a credit card check, do a credit check on me, see what my credit rating is. He says, wow, you're finally going to ask to borrow money or loan or mortgage? I said, something like that. Just, I'm going to videotape it and put it online so people can see the process of doing a background credit check. He's like, yeah, sure, no problem. So he starts it up and he runs it through. And I'm videotaping the whole thing. He's like, oh, man, he's like, don't put your, be careful. Don't put your, personal information on there. To me, it's not my personal information. Anybody can have access to this information. It's ridiculous. Somebody wants that information, they're going to get that information. So I just let him put all the information up there, social security, notice, everything. So then he runs it, he hits enter. He says to me, he said, hey, he says, you don't exist. I said, what? He says, you don't exist. I said, what do you mean I don't exist? And he literally said, you do not exist in our world.
Then how can you have a bank account there? How could they have you in any sort of situation if you didn't exist in the system?
Because I'm not a debtor. I've never been in debt. I've never entered into the world of being a debtor. A debtor is a
So you've
slave.
Not done anything that requires credit.
Debtor, the definition, that's why I got to do the dictionary for you people, one word at a time, because I just asked you. Guilt means debt. Debt means slave. I've never voluntarily entered into being a slave.
So that's where the slavery comes into play, is the debt that we volunteer into. And that you not ever
because you love it. Because you love it because they give you gizmos and gadgets. Why
go
not be a slave?
Can
you, Carl?
You're a slave. Go get a credit card, you're a slave.
And that's what the man said to me. He said, what's funny? He says, I see on here, you never even applied for a credit card and got turned down. He says, you never even applied for a loan and got turned down. You never applied. And why would I apply? What's apply mean? What's the definition of apply?
Implement yourself.
Apply, like you're applying for a job, right? What does apply mean? The definition of apply.
The process of trying to be a part of something.
Surrender yourself. You're giving yourself up.
Beg. For
make
a
formal application of request. You're requesting. Requesting is begging. Yeah, I get it.
Beg for a position. Why?
Losing you.
Yeah, we kind of went out again. Are you there, Carl? Let us know when he pops back on. I guess we'll wrap things up.
Yeah. So what I'm getting from what Carl's saying is it's been what I've been thinking this whole time is that
can you hear us, Carl?
Can you hear me?
You back?
Yeah, we can.
Yeah, I walked out of I had to take the phone out of the house, and
it's okay. We're gonna get ready to, I guess, wrap things up. Me and Stan will have a little conversation here. Do you currently have a show, a radio show, a YouTube channel, anything that people can check out right now?
Nah, like I said, the big thing for me was to set up the school. I've bought a lot of cameras. I've got four cameras now. I'd say I must have dumped close to $11,000 into building the school.
Well, if you need, I want to talk to you separately another time too. If you need some help with getting things set up, you're not incredibly far from me. And I told you my family's like in the vicinity. So maybe we can do something where I can lend a little bit of my technical skills to help you out with some of these areas.
Oh yeah, I remember. That's right. I couldn't remember.
Yeah,
so yeah, you're the man who's telling me about that.
Yeah, no, it's cool. And I'll make sure I stay on top of you about that. And I definitely want to do, more conversations. And I know you got to get ready to go. I want to give Stan a chance to ask any last thing he wants to ask you and then give you a chance to do final thoughts.
Yeah, I got a question to ask you folks, man.
Yeah.
Is this a little bit of different of explanation of things that the way you guys have heard?
Yeah, it's been
Nobody talks like I do.
Yeah. Carl, I want to ask you, this is what I've come to the conclusion, is that these systems are basically, it's a parallel system, but by our own fault, we've basically learned that we've consented, and that's how I viewed it. But as we move forward, it's just knowing basically how to navigate these waters, so to speak, and have your standing as a man throughout society. And if you do get in these situations, you got to know how to enter into these jurisdictions and how to converse and get around their obstacles.
Let me put it, give you a really, really super simple example. When we have children that are born into my family, it's a tradition and custom for us to go and open up bank accounts and get savings bonds and put the savings bonds in for the kids. I don't know if you folks do that or if you ever heard people that do that, but that's what we do.
Yeah. Okay. It used to be very customary.
Yeah.
Or like get a Gerber life insurance policy or something like that.
Right. Or write a trust fund or write a college fund going.
College fund, yeah. We're on the same
something.
Page.
Right. Okay. So what was funny is my mom goes to the bank and I go down to the bank with my mom, and she opens up an account for my son, the one that was taken into state custody. Mm-hmm. And the bank manager, branch lady, talks to my mom and says, hang on a second. Goes to the branch manager man comes out and shakes my mom's hand and says, I'm looking at a unicorn. And my mom's like, what do you mean? She says, you got a perfect credit score. I didn't think that was possible. I've never seen or heard of anybody that ever got a perfect credit score ever. You know, are you wealthy? Are you extremely wealthy? And my mom's like, hardly. She said, I've never made more than $20,000, but twice in my whole entire life working for the IRS. It's basically a seasonal job. So they said, how in the world did you get a perfect credit score? And my mom says, I know how to deal with my creditors. I know how to draft documents. I know how to send off letters. I know how to write a business letter. I know how to deal with my creditors. And he was like, well, I've never seen nothing like this. And it's pretty amazing. And that's what I said to him. I said, well, and you don't understand, my mom works a seasonal job for the IRS. She has a mortgage still. She has a light bills, property taxes. She has, her bills, phone bills. She has all her normal bills that normal people have, electricity, everything. She usually gets laid off in October, November, and she doesn't get called back up until January 1st. And then she writes to the creditors that unfortunately it's October and you won't be seeing any money heading your way towards until maybe March, maybe the beginning of April. But I'll do the best I can as fast as I can. Perfect credit score. Was she late on all the bills? You better believe it. Was she late every year? You better believe it. Was she ever on time? Rarely. Did she have a perfect credit score? You better believe it.
That's wild.
She knew how to work with her creditors. And you folks have no clue. This was so simple for me to understand this concept when I was a kid, that when I hear people like yourselves talking, like, what kind of mom did you have? Was she an orthodontist or something? What did she do for a living? I mean, how didn't your mom teach you this? How didn't your dad teach you this? My mom taught me how to deal with my creditors, and my dad taught me how to deal with like what you call natural law. So I got very lucky. My mom and dad were completely opposites. I mean, completely opposites.
So let me ask you this. Does Carl have a driver's license and tags?
Now, what you say is half. What does Carl Lentz, first of all, first I'd say.
Utilize. Do you utilize those documents?
First, if it's my benefit, if it's at a certain times, it would be a benefit, a great benefit. Like say I got a CDL. And say I wanted to make $1,000 a day because somebody wanted me to drive their truck from point A to point B in a commercial endeavor. Would rather have $1,000 in green fiat currency in his pocket, or would Carl just rather just have a noble goal and ideals in his head? What would benefit Carl at this time?
I'm sure the money would.
The green dollars, right? So I could buy cameras, so I could teach people, so I could build a classroom. So I could teach people around the world how to deal with this stuff. So what would be the benefit of just saying, well, I'm going to live the noble life. I'm going to be, you know, I'm not going to, you know, succumb to the fictional entities, da, 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 and I'm going to pull myself out of the, you know, this maze that they got us in. How BS, you know, if it's a benefit, if I see that it's, you know, I should be using this at my time for my benefit, I'm going to use it. It's a tool. It's like a hammer. You don't always use a hammer when you got to change the light bulb, but it's just a tool that I have in my toolbox that helps me get on with my day. Like I said, you know, our forefathers are, you know, our families built this wonderful system. And yes, some of them used it to enslap us entrap us and enslave us. Absolutely. No doubt about it. You can go all kinds of Zionist theories and all this other stuff. That's fine. I got no problem with that. But if you're godly, they can't do it to you. If you're ungodly, they could do it to you. So all the people, unfortunately, people might not like this when I say this. If you don't understand what's going on, it's because at this point, you are still ungodly. You don't have that concept of the creator, of a one, of the source, and everything goes back to one. And who is your one? That's the dilemma that everybody has. Who's your one?
I don't know.
Who's the one that you look up to?
I don't know if you did that on purpose, but you completely wrapped that, like you circled back around to where you started. And
I do it all the time, man.
But with the timing of where we're at and me knowing what you got to do, it's perfect timing.
It's funny. I'll give you one little silly one like that. One guy used to hang out here all the time, and he was here for, I think, 11 or 14 weeks over the years. And he said to somebody, I wasn't listening. He was doing his own show, but I listened to the podcast or the download of this show. It was very funny what he said. He said, sometimes it's very, very painful to listen to Carl talk because Carl doesn't speak politically correct. And sometimes Carl will drop the N word and sometimes Carl will drop the C word and Carl will get very ugly with people asking for help. And they're basically crying. He says, I don't know how this guy does it. He said, but he could talk to them for 2 hours. And in the last 1 hour and 58 minutes, they're singing Kumbaya and hugging each other, and they love each other. He says, I don't know how he circles it and how he does it, because he says, boy, it's painful to listen to this man talk. This man, where is he going with this? I don't know. It sure sounds ugly. But somehow he pulls it off.
I tried to slightly prepare Stan for who I thought you were. Just because, I mean, you're a very unique man, is what I was saying.
Very simple.
You're a
man.
Very special snowplake.
A judge said that to me one time in court. He said, you're the smartest man I ever met. I said, sir. It was funny. He says, no, I'm serious. He said, I've talked to members of Congress. He said, I've actually testified before the Senate. He says, I've met, you know, judiciary, you know, personnel from all over the earth. He says, I've never met a man as smart. I said, you could fill this courthouse up 1,000 times over with people smarter than I am, but you're never going to find anybody who could take the most complicated problem and break it down into its simplest form as fast as I could do it. I said, I'll accept that title of the simplest man you've ever met. Smartest? No. Simplest? You betcha.
Awesome. Awesome.
Occam's razor, right?
That's what everybody could understand around the world. You look at my website and you see the planet Earth, you see the globe, and you see all those little red dots in Mongolia, Siberia, you know, Tibet, Africa. Like, what? Why are these people all over the world listening to this man? Because I'm simple. No matter what language you translate what I'm doing, everything is broken down to the single syllable words, and everybody, they could all fit on a bumper sticker, and it all makes sense. Nothing complicated, no five-syllable words, no three-syllable. No, no, I'm not going there. I want it to be translated in any language on planet Earth so everybody can understand what I'm saying. Keep it simple.
Well, it sounds like, it sounds like that's it then. You just got to, you can't really take down the system. You just have to learn how to navigate. You need to stand your ground.
And the system's wonderful.
And realize yourself as source, God.
No, we want to be able to, I think it's a wonderful system. And once people start understanding the simplicity of how to navigate through this system, one, some people are going to try to take advantage of the simplicity of the system and cause a lot of chaos and mayhem. And if you actually study what Fidel Castro did, he figured it out as well. Like, you could compare me with Fidel Castro. He figured it out. The only problem is he actually told everybody the answer about usury fee, about bankings, about credit. He told everybody. And it went from the second most wealthiest country in the Western Hemisphere to the poorest country to this day in the world because the banks all left. So I don't want people to know everything. Those people go hog wild. I'm not going to pay my mortgage. I'm not going to pay the car loans. I'm not going to pay the credit cards. I'm not going to pay this. I'm going to pay that. Holy cow. I get all this for free. Yeah, just like Cubans did back in 58. Same thing.
Interesting.
Yeah, and
I had to look into
now look what happened. And the banks will leave. The banks will leave just like they left Cuba. And there's 2 billion people in India and 2 billion people in China. They don't need us. The banks don't need us. They got 4 billion people, and we're a little itty bitty tiny country that only has 300 million people. They got countries that dwarfed us, that we're just a little itty bitty country. Malaysia is going to beat us soon in population. Most people can't tell me where Malaysia is on a map.
Right.
Malaysia is going to beat us. You see what I'm saying?
You got an interesting perspective, and I'm definitely looking forward to, continuing this conversation with you for sure.
All righty.
So, Carl,
I'm a simple guy, man. Yeah, like I said, I'm not as hateful as you thought I was going to be, huh?
Well, I didn't say hateful. Yeah, it's just hateful. I'm from the D.C. metropolitan area. I know that you're a New Yorker. I know Northerners. I'm fine, but some people who aren't used to it, I thought you were going to be a lot more abrasive than you were. So I was really, really seriously impressed with the way you've handled yourself.
Well, we've heard some of your previous videos. So.
Oh yeah, if anybody tries to point people in the wrong direction, which I believe people are going to get hurt, like you try to tell me the wonderful benefits of smoking crystal meth, I'm going to go nuts on you.
Right.
So if you try to tell me the wonderful belief of using the Constitution when you go to court or the Magna Carta, I'm going to go nuts on you. Why? Because you're going to jail. That's not going to work. And you're going to hurt these people. And I don't want these people hurt. You got to stop. And I will destroy any guru that tries to give people out false information that I believe is going to hurt people. Now, he could argue back that it ain't going to hurt. I'm like, okay, prove it. Show me that it ain't going to hurt these people. But I'm telling you, you're going to hurt these people. And I want to make it my power and my effort to stop you. Because you're wasting people's lives. You're wasting their knowledge. You're wasting their brain space. And I just want people to go out and enjoy the fresh air. Well, like me, I'm outside working every day. Rain, snow, I'm out here every day. I want people to be out in God's world. Not inside of a building, not reading books.
That's what I want people to realize. That's the reason why you're not on camera, is because you actually were doing work and getting ready to go pick up somebody at the airport. So it's like you were doing lots of things and you graced us with your time. So I really appreciate it.
Like I said, man, I'm just getting ready to go. Yeah.
All right, man. Your camera's back on. I don't know if you meant to do that on purpose.
Yeah, like I said, it's got to open the gate and –
do we want to ask Carl about each of the people we've interviewed and what his take on them on this
that's
this
what call, I was going to – that's kind of what –
it's funny. Isn't this ironic, man? See, I got three cop cars. Ain't that ironic? I drive a cop car.
Next time we talk, Carl.
And it's got the divider in it and everything,
That's funny.
Is that a giant
– Next time we do this, though, if you're cool with it, we'd like to run by some of the people that we've been looking at interviewing and just get your take on it, just to kind of get some different perspective. Not necessarily negatively, but just to kind of get a different perspective.
I don't know. Oh, yeah, like just looked like Moses. When Carl flashed through for a minute, he looked like Moses.
Yeah. No, like I said, it's funny that for years I looked like Jesus. Now I look like Moses. Yeah. But no, like I said, it's funny if it don't really get people on, who have their own beliefs against me, because I don't want to make them feel bad, because I'll just destroy them. I mean, I don't have no mercy for that kind of nonsense.
But at the same time, if people are doing something that could be bad for people, I think that people should have that information available to them and choose what to do with it. So,
but well, look what the one guy said on the show. He called me up one time. He says, "Carl, I love you and I hate you." I said, "Why do you hate me? Why do you love me?" Because I love people who hate me, because it gives me something to talk about. It gives me controversy. So I said, what's the hate? Give me the hate. He says, well, he says, let me tell you, I love you because you do a great show. He said, unfortunately, he said, I used to have my whole week scheduled out, just like I did. I used to get a satellite radio because I lived in the middle of nowhere. I couldn't get anything else but satellite radio, no internet, nothing. He said, Sunday night, I listened to this man, and Monday, I listened to this group, and Tuesday, I listened to this woman, and Wednesday, I listened to this group, and Thursday, I listened to this woman, and Friday, and then Saturday was your show. He says, you kicked everybody to the curb. You destroyed everybody. He says, all the gurus are gone. And the gurus were still around. He says, I listened to them and I realized they don't have a clue. That why am I listening to these clowns? They're clueless. They have absolutely no idea what's going on. And he says, so you ruined my week. He said, I used to have my whole week scheduled out. Now I'll wait for Saturday to listen to you. He says, you really suck. He says, I had a, you know, because now I listen to these other people. And I go, what am I listening to these people for? This doesn't make any sense. This won't work. Carl already explained why it won't work. So why am I still listening to this? So that's why it's funny. I actually read something or saw something on the internet saying that the sovereign citizen movement has been dead for about 5 years now. Nothing, it hasn't popped up. And I was like, yeah, that's because Carl Lentz walked away for 5 years. I haven't done a damn thing since 2015.
We'll talk more about that, because we've also learned not to even get into the word sovereign, but that's something we'll cover with you.
Sovereign citizen, you put the two together, it's an oxymoron.
Well, if you do, you'll be entering into my website domain, because I bought that name.
Which domain?
The sovereign citizen domain.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, I did it to actually flip it around to make a positive thing. It's like, you know, like I'm making it so it's cool. Like the word cool. I don't know if you know where the word cool comes from. It used to be a disparaging term to talk to the Chinese. The Chinese came up with the railroad.
You're breaking up really bad. Not sure if we lost you.
I like the word cool.
Hey, that everything you just said broke up incredibly. That's where we
Oh no! Like I said, like the word cool. Like you've heard of the word cool, right?
Yeah, you were mentioning where it came from.
Yeah, if anybody, like now, it's a happy thing to be called when somebody says that you're cool.
Right.
Like Fonzie, okay, well, what if
Fonzie was
right,
cool.
Right, and everybody, but at first it was a disparaging term to talk about the Chinese people who came over and built the railroads. They had these really long ponytails, and that meant they were submissive to the emperor. That was a way of showing their obedience and loyalty to the emperor. Those people were called coolies. So it's like when you started growing your hair long, it's like, oh, what do you think? You're a coolie? What do you think? You're cool?
Oh, wow. Okay.
I guess I think I'm cool. I don't know.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
You too, Carl. You think you're cool.
Oh, yeah. But I'm saying it. At one time, it was a disparaging term. So I'm taking the sovereign citizen term, and I'm going to turn it around where it's no
good
longer.
Good point. Good point.
And then you're going to say, you're damn right, I'm a sovereign citizen. And and be proud of it. Own it. Own the name, man. Screw it. You want to call me that? You know, call me the like I said, these crazy guys in Canada call themselves the Warrior Caller or the Dragon Slayer. I said to them, do you understand when you're going before the court, the other side's going to say, you know what this guy calls himself? He calls himself the Dragon Slayer. He calls himself the Warrior Caller. This guy's, you know, this guy wants to start chaos and mayhem. I said, why don't you use names like I do, like Muffin Man, the Cookie Crumbler,
you're
the Fudge Packer. You know what this guy goes by? This guy goes by the Fudge Packer. This guy goes by the Cookie Crumbler. You know what anarchy he's trying to cause in this country? He is the, you know, he's the Muffin Man.
Muffin Man.
You're not going to rip terror and fear in the hearts of the jurists when the prosecutor says you're the Muffin Man. You know, so dude, you know, you want to just back it off a few notches, like your buddy Christopher James does this head with a green thing like the Wizard of Oz, or black thing behind his head. He's got a green face with a black background or something like the Wizard of Oz.
I get you, dude.
Ridiculous. Okay, I guess that answers the question for one.
Yeah. So has your friend arrived at the airport yet?
I'm on my way now to get on up there. She hasn't called yet. So, oh, you know what might be bad? Her phone might have died. That would really be bad if her phone is like, I'm waiting for.
Well, Carl, I know. I mean, combination.
Should we ask him about the others?
If you got a chance. I mean, now we got 15 minutes roughly before we got a 15, right. 20 minutes.
So, Carl, I'm sure you're familiar with Anna von Reitz.
Not really. I heard about her years ago, and she recommends – she. All I know is she tells people to get in touch with me for certain things.
But you really
like, I don't know, but what's that? No, I've never talked to her, no.
She's got a thing. Her and some other people are putting together the American States Assembly, where they're actually forming state assemblies and going based off of and trying to take.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah, and also and going back to things that our forefathers wanted us to do, and you actually see that there was a lot of different things within the governance models, and all we really have is just the federal government. Like the Confederation is gone. The Federation is gone. She went through all these different things. She seems to be very well educated on that, but she also talks about the legal fiction straw man stuff. And they have a way of what they're saying that you can change your political status. And it involves the Naturalization Act of, I'm not sure the year. Do you remember?
1791. I could be wrong.
Something like that. But I can send you the website so you can check it out when you get an opportunity. Because she seems to have a lot of good information.
Oh, yeah, because like I said, if you understood the sarcasm, what I just said, but you didn't, it went right over your head because you don't know the definition. That'd probably be one of the first words I teach people, too, is the word nice. I said, that's nice. The teacher was asking me, why can't you be nice like the other kids? Well, I know French, and French means nice means a fool. Why won't I be a fool like everybody else? So, like I said, it's nice that she's getting all these groups together, but until people understand it, you know, like I said, that again, when you get a group going, again, you're looking at a hierarchical order. Again, you're looking at somebody's going to be at the top of the group. There's going to be some sort of a president, vice president. Going
to be No. I we'll send it to you. I think if you see it, you'll see what it is. It's basically, I think, in terms, if I understand it correctly and comprehend it correctly, it's basically you're just coming out as the man or the woman.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And the assemblies are just to where we can assemble to hold our own. I don't want to say courts because that could be wrong. But
sure, no, it's fine.
But
no, you're courting.
Well, so we'll send you the information. Could definitely, if we can talk again, I'd be curious to see what you gathered from it.
Yeah, because courting is a good term. There's nothing wrong with courting.
And also with their website, they've got a lot of Zoom meeting calls, so they go over some of the information. So you actually might be listening to some things where she brings up your name, and maybe you can get a little bit more familiarity with that.
Oh, yeah. But like I said, that's what somebody told me about her years ago, back in 2013, 2014, and when she first popped up. And I said, look, I said, before I talk to this woman, I have to do some background on her. I'm gonna go to Alaska. You guys want to fund me, go bring me to Alaska, pay for my ticket. I'll actually go to the courts and I'll actually see where I'll read some of her rulings. And then eventually her and her partner got arrested and they were charged with impersonating judges. And it's a very easy case to beat because my dog's a hell of a judge. You know, I could judge apple picking pie contests at the county fair. I could be a judge. So what is your term, the definition of judge?
Right.
She didn't say she was a legal judge. She said she is a judge. I'm a hell of a judge of character, I believe, as well. But it's funny that she encapsulated that within her name or title, which is kind of deceptive and deceiving because she actually doesn't preside over, like...
We covered that in the interview.
She doesn't claim to be a judge. She said anybody could be a judge because in the assemblies, you just, you know, by a show of hands, we elect someone to be a judge. You elect your, you have your juries.
But back in 2013, 2014, if she said, my name is Anna Weiss-Fies and I know everything about everything... You wouldn't pay attention to it. Now she says, I'm Judge Anna Weiss-Fies. Oh, well, now we're going to sit up because she's got some sort of title of nobility. So she's the king. She's the lord. She's the squire. She's a judge. See, that's what I'm saying. I thought that was very deceptive. And I'm trying to get people away from the titles. I'm trying to tell people, do you understand when you accept these titles, you are entering into their jurisdiction?
That makes sense.
If you don't have a title, you know, like if you want me to be the Grand Viceroy of the East India Tea Company, and you would send me off to Calcutta or Bombay or whatever in India because it's a, you know, I'm the Grand Viceroy of the East India Tea Company. Oh my God, that's awesome. Well, the weather sucks. The food is terrible. You can't drink the water and it's humid and muggy all the time, you know, and it's filthy. Okay, now the Queen might want me to accept that title, but I'll say under these terms and conditions, I'll accept that title. And then I'll lay up my list of terms and conditions. But I'm not just walking in to be the Grand Viceroy of the East India, no matter how wonderful the title sounds. she's going to latch upon me if I say yes. Then she's going to make me do all kinds of her bidding. I have to abide by her rules. And if I don't, well, then she can impose upon me and position me. She could take me out of my position as man and throw me around and banter me around and throw me like a doll because I'm her now, biatch. So
I get it. What about someone like Russell J. Gould or his teacher?
What was he doing? David Wynn Miller.
Are you familiar with
David? David Wynn Miller? He's funny.
Well, David Wynn Miller passed away, and this is somebody who funny learned from him.
It's funny. When I first heard of him back in like 2010, 2008, he said that he's never aged. He'll never die. He got hit by lightning in 1972. So what I think happened is his dad probably got hit by lightning. Oh, no, his dad died. He took on his dad's persona, his dad's name, his dad's everything. And he said he was like 97 years old. It was ridiculous when he first came out. He shouldn't have said that nonsense. But anyway,
So anyway, Russell J. Gould is taking on basically his legacy.
He's doing the work. Yeah, but he's doing the words. Again, it's about words, right?
Yeah, it's all about words.
It's all about words. But what I'm saying is, right. So what you can say is the words are mightier than a sword. The only problem is, like, how do you control 3/4 of the population on planet Earth that words mean nothing to them? The written language means nothing to them. So what makes when the Catholics came over to the New World and said to the Indians, all this land, all your possessions, all your gold, all your children, everything belongs to the Pope. It says who? It says this book right here. And the Indians is like, I don't hear the book saying anything. What are you talking about? You're just messing with us now, right? It's just like this stuff that feels like dried up leaves. Like, okay, what who are you zooming? You know, who are you kidding? This is a joke, right? This is a sick joke, right? You don't really think we're going to believe this BS, do you? You know, like I said, that's the way to me. It's like if somebody tries to throw a piece of paper, like my dad was classic like that. You know, some sheriff would come by and say, you know, you've been summoned to appear in court. My dad said, by who? By the judge. What? You mean my dog? And my dog's a hell of a judge. Any judge in particular? He's like, look, man, here's a summons. It's like, oh, man, look, somebody wrote all over this paper. What? I can't wipe my butt with it now, man. It's already covered with BS, you know, already covered.
What do you think?
He said, what do you think about a piece of paper now. He said, and then the cop would say, let me read it to you. I said, read what? Read the summons. I said, he says, I don't know who you are. I'm a cop. I said, I wouldn't trust my wife if she read it to me. Why would I trust you? You know, I was like, get out of here. You know, if he wants to talk to me, he can come down and talk to me man to man. And that's how my dad rolled. And that's how people roll for thousands of years.
Your dad sounded like he was a cool dude. What do you think about this guy named Carl Lentz?
Oh, yeah.
Your thoughts on this guy?
Which one?
Carl Lentz.
Which Carl Lentz?
You. What are your thoughts on yourself?
Lentz. Oh, me?
Yeah.
Myself?
What's your interpretation?
Oh, I just think I'm a pretty funny guy, man. Well, what I really hope to achieve, and people might laugh at this, what I really hope to achieve, and I think people might laugh, I want everybody on Earth to understand what I'm saying. Go back to the way it used to be, you know, the understanding of the way it used to be, you know. And once everybody understands what's going on, you know, then I think we'll have world peace. And what's extremely funny is what I really want to see in 10 years or 20 or 30 years from now, everybody has basically the same. We're all on the same page again. Because that's what I did back in the 1990s. I started working for Sony and Dell Computers. I started, you know, doing fiber optics. I started working for Sprint, and I started working for all the cable companies. And because in 1984, yes, Al Gore passed the Communications Act of 1984, and everything was going to get digitized by the year 2000. So we all started going in that direction. And I knew the internet would be a way to communicate with people all over the world. Look at my website. You can see somebody in Mongolia accessed my website, and the website hasn't been around that long. And somebody in Mongolia and Tibet hit my website. That's crazy, dude. That's awesome. I'm known on 6 continents. There's no way in the world anybody would ever figure from where I'm come from back in New York that Carl Lentz would actually be known in Mongolia. And I get letters from people from Malaysia all the time, in Cambodia. This is insane.
Well, your work is impressive, man. It speaks for itself in a lot of ways. So, I mean,
what was really funny is somebody, Mark in Atlanta, his wife is going through Lou Gehrig's disease, and she's dying, and they have support groups down there. And he says, Carl, I'm so glad. He was the second person to ever come visit me back in 2013. And he said, Carl, I'm so glad I met you because everybody in the support group's like, oh, I hate it. My mom, my dad, my wife, my husband, my kids, I got Lou Gehrig's. I got to wipe their butt. I got to help them breathe. I got to help them put tubes in them. And he says, Carl, he says, I'm the only one in a group that's happy and smiling and saying, and it's like, and say to them, like, why are you so depressed? Why are you upset? Oh, because of Lou Gehrig's. It's like, and he says what I said to people years ago about my kid having Downs when the government told me my kid's going to be deaf, dumb, blind, and crippled. They said, just sign him away. And when I said, no, I'm not going to sign him away, he said, you know, you're the first father that we've ever told him that he's going to be deaf, dumb, blind, and crippled that didn't sign his kid away. I said, well, okay. And he said, well, why won't you do it? I said, well, because God never gives me anything more than I can't handle. So God must think I'm one tough son of a bitch if I can handle a deaf, dumb, blind, crippled kid. I said, that's a hell of a project to work on. I was trying to figure out what I was going to do anyway for the rest of my life. Now I got a pretty good idea of where my life's going to be heading, how am I going to support, take care of, and manage this, you know, deaf, dumb, blind, crippled human being. And that's what he said to people in a support group. He said, God gave us these wives and husbands of ours now who have Lou Gehrig's disease, because God must think we're really tough people. God would never give us anything that we couldn't handle. So God knows that we're up to the tasks. So let's see what we could do. So let's see how we could pull it off. Let's see how we could figure it out. And we made the support group to help each other work it out. So he said, see, right there. That's a way of looking at it positively. He says, you always put a positive spin on everything. I said, yes. And hopefully in 10, 20 years from now, people will all have this understanding. And when your grandkids say, you know, did you used to listen to like police officers? Did the police officers used to really drag you people out and do these horrible things? Did you people really go through all this nonsense? Did you really listen to your servants? Did these guys in black robes put you in cages? Was this true? And you'd be like, well, yeah, until this guy named Carl Lentz came around. It's like, Carl Lentz? Carl Lentz who? I hope in 20, 30 years, nobody needs to know who I am or what I did. Not like a Jesus Christ kind of guy, but because it becomes so plain again, plain, so obvious, you know, in the world, and so obvious within our societal order that, you know, around the world, that you didn't really need Carl Lentz. God put everything in you, you know, and, you know, I'm just helping you, you know, I'm just trying to give you the keys. And somebody called me a legend because I believe I am a legend, because a legend, if you look at a map, there's always symbols and characters and colors on the bottom, and that's called the legend. And the legend just points you in a direction that you should be going. Now, you can go any direction you want. Now, follow the blue, that's the rivers. You follow the black, that's the streets. You follow the double line, that's the interstates. How do you know? Because it says so in the legend. So the legend points you in a direction that you should be going. Or you choose which way you want to go. But it's nice to have a legend to know what I'm looking at. What are my options? Do I take the river? Do I take the train? Do I take the interstate? Do I take the roads? You know, it'd be nice if somebody put a damn legend in front of me so I could kind of have an idea of which way to go.
So well said, man. You are surprising the hell out of me. And I really, truly am looking forward to the next conversation. Stan's got to get to work here in a few, and I know you got stuff. You got to wrap things up. So we definitely got to wrap things up.
Well, how about real quick? What about David Strait?
All right, I hope it doesn't ruin my reputation of being an asshole, because I've worked very hard at trying to accomplish that title.
No, I don't think completely. But yeah, real quick, Stan.
Yeah, but I do. I like it.
Stan, Carl, what about David Strait? What do you know about David Strait?
Who?
David Strait.
What's he do?
Are you,
he do that. He does that word stuff you said, like the other guy did that died.
No.
Okay, who's David Strait? Just tell me his philosophy. Tell me what he basically does. What he believes in.
It's something similar in capturing your changing your political status and taking dominion over all the different jurisdictions of law. Being the man, but clearly taking dominion over those jurisdictions within the system.
Yeah, the only problem is it's their world. They created it. We're guests. Guests means hostile enemies. That legal societal order, like that, the Masons, the Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, we're guests. They created that societal order. They created all these rules. They created all these bylaws. They created all these. We are just fortunate that they allow us to intercourse with them at times that would be our benefit. And so to me, I don't see anything wrong with the Boy Scout Society. Hey, if you want to be a member of the Black Panthers, you want to be a member of the Little Lord of the Ku Klux Klan, God bless you. If that's where your heart's pointing, you want to be satanic, Satanists, whatever they call these people, whatever. You know, God pointing you in that direction. You know, God created good, God created evil for a reason, to make life interesting. You know, I'm not trying to destroy anything. I'm not trying to control anything. You know, I'm just trying to navigate my way through, you know, and just say, hey, you know what? I want to go in this direction. If this tries to impede my path, this is how I deal with it. If, you know, if it's, if this is a hurdle, I'm going to learn how to get over it or go around it, you know, but no, I'm not going to be under its control, because I'm God fearing. I believe in God. And that's what almost everybody that you say, you know, they don't go back to the author, because the author is the creator or the father. Author literally means, Google it, father, creator. And all the authority comes from the author, because it's author, authority comes from the father or the creator. And all the government's power comes from the people. Because every single person I've ever asked this question, not one person has got it correct unless you listen to my show. I always ask people, what form of government do the people have upon this land? What is our form of government? What form of government that was established for us as a people? What's the form of government?
I mean, they call it a democracy, but that's not exactly what it is.
Okay, what does your buddy think it is?
What do you think it is, buddy?
Well, that's definitely what they call it, democracy.
Okay, well, the democracy means mob rules. The mob rules is the most evil, most demonic form of democracy. It's right there in the word, democracy. It's demonic.
Yeah.
No, they said it's, and like I said, if like you think that's what George Washington and Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, you believe they believed in the democracy?
No, they were about the Republic, right?
No, they said, what did they say? That all men are created equal?
Yeah, but they
it says all men are created equal, right?
Yeah, but slaves at the time too. So
it doesn't matter. Well, they didn't consider them.
They didn't consider them to be man
equal.
Yeah, they didn't consider them to be the equals. They considered that back then, it's like they thought it was a different race, like Martians, like a whole bunch of green people running around planet Earth. They thought they don't know about genetics. They didn't know the parts are interchangeable. You know, so back then they just thought they were like another race. It was like, you know, they didn't think that, you know, there was humans, you know, like of the human race. You know, they just thought they were another species, and you know, another subset, like, you know, whatever. No, but they said all men are created equal, right? It literally says that right there in the very beginning, right? Mm-hmm. Got you know read the Declaration of Independence,
that would
right
be
there.
Common law.
Well, it's all men are created equal. What philosophy is that? Is that a democratic philosophy?
No.
Well, kind of. It's like one man, one vote. It's kind of like a democracy.
Yeah, I mean, you can stretch it out in some ways if you want to make it fit.
Yeah, what's the definition of, like, say, Donald Trump says the other day, oh, we got to get rid of these horrible, evil anarchists.
An anarchist, because I am an anarchist, it means someone has no ruler or no authority.
That all men are created equal.
Right. Right. It's the opposite of monarchy, and monarchy is having a ruler or oligarchy. Right. And an anarchist is simply someone who has no ruler, who is their own master.
Right. Right. When you don't have God, you need a monarchy. Somebody needs to be in control. Somebody, you need to fear somebody, and you don't have God. But if you have God, all men are created equal under God. That's what they said. So it's funny when Donald Trump's like, we got to get rid of all these anarchists. It's like, you mean you want to get rid of Thomas Jefferson and James Madison and James Monroe?
Yeah, well, it's just unfortunately, I mean, you talk about definitions of words, and unfortunately what I've realized is that society does tend to change what things might actually mean. So the socially accepted definition of anarchy is what is chaos and lawlessness, even though
that's what the king would say. The king would say, we got all these, the king would say, look at these crazy Americans, the colonists. Look at these people. Look at this nonsense they wrote. They believe in anarchy. They believe that all men are created equals. Look at this. They don't believe in the king. Look at these anarchists. So, gee, I wonder who took over the schools. Gee, I wonder who took over. You see, when I wrote my dictionary, I used dictionaries back from like Samuel Johnson and Jay Johnson. They were father and son from the 1700s. These are the dictionaries that Thomas Jefferson would have used, Monroe would have used, Madison would have used. If you look at what's the go-to dictionary for Supreme Court justices for, like, the rights to bear arm? Like, what's their go-to dictionary? These clowns actually use Noah Webster's dictionary. The only problem with Noah Webster's dictionary was written 50, 60 years after the Constitution was drafted and the Declaration of Independence. So you're trying to say that you're going to define the words that we're using today in 2020, in 2070, you're going to tell us in 2070 the words that we were using in 2020 better than we could use them. You're going to give us a better definition. So when I realized Noah Webster was the dictionary of the legal society, if this is what they were using, I said, huh, I wonder how they, why they decided to not use like Jay Johnson's or even Tomlin's was 1813. Why would they use such a new dictionary? Why would they use something from the 1820s, 1830s? Why would they use such a modern dictionary to
they've redefined everything.
Well, see, what I do is I fact check things. So I'm very, the amount of research I did was amazing. And compared to what I've seen, and thank God somebody actually put it online, what I actually said, and you could Google it. What I did was I went to the biggest private law university in this country, Washington Lee down here in Virginia. Thank God I lived right down the street from it. And I decided to live really close to it so I could do my research. So what I do is I would actually go back, because newspapers have been around, or gazettes have been around for a very long time. So I went to the London Time Review of 1828 to see if I could find the of Noah Webster's dictionary, and I couldn't find anything in 1828, so I went to 1829, and there it was, 1829, London's Time Review of Noah Webster's 1828 dictionary, and they said this is the biggest pile of claptrap, you know, mumble jumble BS. The English language's been around for 1100 years. Well, who's this asshole think he'd come around and change all the definitions of these words? This is dribble. How dare he think? Who does this guy think he is? Where does this guy even come from? Who is this guy? And, you know, this book will never make it. This book is a sick joke, and anybody who reads it would be a complete moron. Yet, everybody in the United States Supreme Court justices, if you Google what's their to-go-to book, what's the dictionary that they resource when they're looking up a word like right to bear arm, it'll say Noah Webster's 1828. And it's like, wow. Didn't anybody in the Supreme Court, like a Scalia or Thomas or all these great jurists, didn't anybody do what Carl Lentz did and say, what book am I using? No, these are a bunch of lazy effers. I mean, I'm telling you, they're a bunch of lazy effers. So that's all crazy. These fantastic jurists, they're like, oh, the dictionary to go to is Noah Webster's 1828.
Well, that's what their club, their guild, that's what their club and guild taught them, right? So that's their...
Well, what it is anybody in the Supreme Court, like I said, it's funny. You could Google this. Watch a whole bunch of YouTube videos. Watch valedictorians bash the school system. And you watch all these Hindi kids now and Chinese kids and white girls, black boys, they're all graduating high school and universities, and they're saying we are the stupidest kids that graduated this year. You made us number one. But honestly, all we know how to do is recite things like a parakeet. We don't have any real world experience. All we know how to do is spit out what we were told. And if we could spit it out like a robot, like a machine, like a computer, we get rewarded. So we just cram all the information we need to know Monday through Thursday. We take the test on Friday, get the A, and we throw that information out of our heads. And then we memorize the stuff again the following week. We have no clue. And that's, like I said, I can see this justice lady that they're putting her into the Supreme Court now. She was the number one in her class in Notre Dame. She was Scalia's clerk. And I guarantee she was just pumped this information in her head, and she could recite it like a parrot. She has no notes. She doesn't need any notes because she just gets this information dumped on her like a computer, and she can spit it out like a computer. And it's like, okay, lady, but like I said, every single Supreme Court justice, not a single Supreme Court justice ever practiced law from the defendant's side of the bench. Not a single one. So they don't know what it's like to be a defendant. They don't know what it's like to try to move a court. They don't understand the impediments that we, the people, have with trying to move a case through the court system. They think it's wonderful. They think it's lovely. They think it's fair. They think it's just. Did you ever sit on a defendant's side? Yeah. Did you ever act as a defense attorney? No. Then you have effing no clue what it's like for the people to try to move our cases through these courts, do you? Because you people just think everything's freaking wonderful. You went right to academia for 25 years of your life. Then you became clerks or the Supreme Court justices, and then you got appointed to another nice quiet building called the Court of Appeal somewhere that, you know, it's like a mausoleum. You walk in there, you get to hear your heartbeat in the hallways. There's nothing going on. And for some reason, you know what's going on with the people in the United States of America. You seem to have the, you know, the pulse of America, and you people, you're clueless. You're totally effing clueless. So then when a guy like Carl Lentz comes around and I slap all these jurists around like rag dolls, they're like, how did this guy do this? This guy's the smartest guy I've ever met. No, you people are smart. I'm right. Simple. You're smart. I am equals MC squared. You are 10,000 volumes of Y equals MC squared. I am one. I'm a bumper sticker equals MC squared. That guy, Mark from Atlanta, said that to me. He says, I'm going to come down to your house. Did you read that text message I sent you in the morning? I said, look, buddy, I'm on an excavator. I'm digging holes today, man. I got to finish this fence line. Is there some reason why I'm supposed to be looking at this link you want me to see? Click on the damn thing, Carl. And I said, dude, is it chicks with machine guns? He says, no. I said, then, dude, I got no interest right now. Okay, I'm busy. He said, dude, I'm going to get in my car. That's a 10-hour ride. I'm going to come into Atlanta. I'm going to click that damn thing on your phone. And you're going to read it. So I said, fine. I'll click on it. I read it. I said, dude, this is some Malaysian blog spot of famous quotes from dead people like Abraham Lincoln, Jesus Christ, Charles de Gaulle, Thomas Edison, Albert Einstein, Gandhi, Mandela, Carl Lentz. It's like, holy shit. I said, my mom named me after an old dead guy. I said, holy bejesus. I said, wow. So I started reading it. I said, hey, I said something like this. I said, oh my God, I'm stealing some old dead guy's material. What am I doing? I said, maybe this reincarnation thing is real.
That's hilarious.
So then I read the second one. And I say, oh God, I remember the second one was without man, there's no God. Without God, there's no man. I said, that definitely is mine. I said, holy cow. I said, I got people in Malaysia quoting me with a whole bunch of dead guys. I mean, there's nobody else on that website. There was not Ronald Reagan, George Bush. There was nobody who was alive in this blog spots quotes from famous people. So I'm known to having an impact on these people because the stuff I say is so simple. Scalia stole one of my lines. It's great. One of his clerks gave it to him. You know, I don't think Scalia watched my YouTube thing. I'm sure one of his clerks did and handed it to him. He said, every single case is identical, yet every single case is unique. And the answer is because there's always has to be at least two parties in controversy. But even those two parties, with each case, the situation is going to be different.
Right.
So everything is identical, yet every case is unique. There'll always be two parties, but the controversy will always be different.
That makes sense.
Yeah, and it's Lent sense.
Lent sense. I mean, I love it. Well, seriously, Mike, we really do have to wrap it up just because Stan's got to go to work. I hate cutting the conversation off because we're going, but I know we're going to be able to
If it ain't Lent sense, if it ain't Lent sense, man, it's nonsense.
I love it. Well said, dude. Well, Carl, again, man, we really seriously appreciate your time.
Hey, man. Well, look at the guy in Canada, man. He said, look at the guy in Canada. He sent me down some paperwork from Canada when we went to chase the CRA. He said, the judge said, you got a Lentzian style of writing, I see. So I even have a style already recognized by the jurists.
Nice.
So he said, I said, what? He said, a Lentzian style of writing. I said, very simple, very plain, 2-3 lines on a piece of paper, and we are done. Dude, I could give you a blank piece of paper and teach you how to carry that blank piece of paper through the court.
Crazy.
And then all your other buddies, they're doing all these word playing games and acts of 1798. Oh, sweet Jesus. Dude, come on, man. Mm-hmm. I'll give you a blank piece of paper, and I'll carry the day. Right. But don't even put ink in my pen. I got this. I'll talk for 10 days what this blank piece of paper represents.
I love it, dude. Don't
worry about it. I got this.
I love it.
Yeah, really I'm making things simple, man, so you guys get on with your lives.
Well, thank you, man. I'm looking forward to our next conversation.
All right. All right. Good luck, guys.
All right. Thank you, man.
Talk to you.